Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What's up, everybody? What's up, everybody? Welcome to Planet Xbox Podcast. I think we're episode... I'm lost. What episode are we on, Attic? Are we on like 20...
That's Yojo.
I think we're on like 27 or 28. We could be potentially on 30. I have to check BG's channel. For real. Apologize, guys. I made a blunder. I won't give Attic any credit for the blunder for the last episode of why it felt like we were on a hiatus. So we recorded a podcast last week.
Right after the direct.
So we kind of actually have to go back. So we recorded a podcast right after the direct, and my audio was there, Attic's warrant, and that warranted BG to come through and fix my audio setup so that doesn't happen again.
You didn't tell me for like 3 days.
Because I didn't realize that it wasn't. I told you when he told me. I was in like, so I apologize.
I would have reshot it if you would have said something.
Yeah. So that was the era why we missed the podcast. And the last podcast was 26. So this is episode 27. Yeah, so that sucked. That's all on me. That was my blunder, my mistake, my bad. But we're back and we're ready to correct that. So we got a lot of things to talk about. But before we get into that, I do want to talk about what are you playing, man? I know you got a couple games, big games that just came out to start the year off. I think you're involved in some of them, right?
I'm playing Infinite Wealth.
Okay.
It does look like I'm going to get bullied to play Tekken 8. Not a fighter. So we'll see how that goes. I did tell Cog and them, I was like, if you guys bully me and I'm playing Tekken 8,
mm-hmm.
and I learned that I like head-to-head fighters, and I become good and I start beating you guys, you will not hear the end of it. Like, you... This will be the biggest L you have ever received in your life. Because if I start beating people, because I would say that's a very intimate type of game. And one person fighting. Don't let me get loose on that.
Yeah, I've never been able to master the art of fighting games. So Tekken 8 now? Tekken 8 does
9,
look
10,
good.
I don't know.
It looks great, man. But you got, are you playing this on, you got Tekken on console, PC?
PlayStation. They sent me a PlayStation.
Okay. That works. Well, Tekken does have great history on PlayStation, but the game looks amazing. That's for sure. The game looks amazing from what I can see. On both PC and console, it looks slightly better on Xbox. It has the resolution advantage there, tight 60 FPS. So tell Bandai Namco they sent you the wrong version. How's Infinite Wealth, man? It came like to high Metacritic scores. I think it's an early game of the year nominee. You think? Maybe? I don't know.
Right now I haven't played enough to like really justify if it's a game of the year contender or not.
Mm-hmm.
But what I say, what I played on it, it's a solid experience so far.
That's what's up. I want to get into it, but this is going to be a situation where I feel like I don't know how many good games are coming out. I want to play Infinite Wealth, but I feel like I would be doing myself a disservice if I don't complete my playthrough of the first one, like a dragon. I'm going to finish that before I do this. I am working on a game myself. Like, I'm playing another game. I don't know if embargo's up yet, but soon the game it comes out soon. I would say it's a good game. It's a sleeper game because I don't think anybody is expecting it. But I've been busy with that pretty much game. I've also been playing the game Anomaly. Am I saying that right? It says like a little like 2D, like cyberpunk like esque side fighter beat 'em up shooter game. I got review access. I would like to. I will likely be doing a video about it in the next coming days. I got, it's like one of those things, you get the review code like the day of release, so I really couldn't do much about it. Yeah, so but the game is decent, man. Matter of fact, let me not disrespect the game and give you the proper title of the game so everybody know what I'm talking about. I got it. You know what, Attic, and maybe you can help me, I want to get to the point where if we talk about video games that we're playing, or at least or preview or review, I got to make sure I'm in position to have the gameplay displayed. And I actually probably could do it because I did record some gameplay of it. But the game that I was referring to is Anomaly. Damn, I can't say the word Anomaly. I can't say it. Anomaly agent. What you just said, agent. Like, for some reason, I can't say it. But that's how. I've also been playing. Obviously, I've been working my way through Resident Evil 4 one week at a time.
How are you feeling about that game? Let's take a couple minutes, because you're coming from someone that didn't really play the original one too much.
I can't say I didn't play, because I was a day one purchaser of Resident Evil 4 for the GameCube. No, I didn't beat the game. I know I didn't beat it. I don't know if I made it out of the first area. You know what I mean? I thought
you're
the game
about the first island.
Yeah, the first island, like to the point. You know how you know when they're at the beginning, the beginning of the game. Pretty much what I'm learning. I don't know if I ever made it past that. But I struggle with Resident Evil games, and you know this very well. Like, I needed your help on Resident Evil 7. Obviously, I couldn't get through Resident Evil 2. I still got to beat that. Resident Evil 3, I have to beat that. I played Resident Evil Village, didn't beat it, because it's just like, for some reason, Resident Evil, it's like, for some reason, I don't know what it is. Like, I just don't know how to play them. I guess that's what it comes down to. But Resident Evil 4, I was like, you know what? We were talking about it, I think maybe two episodes ago. Maybe on episode 25 or 24, you said you mentioned something to the degree Resident Evil 4, like one of your favorite games last year.
Yeah, I still intend on going back and playing them.
So when you said that, I was like, oh, we game share. I forgot. I got access to that game. Let me download it. And so I started playing, and I played the demo. I didn't beat the demo, believe it or not. I mean, the demo just ran its course. But I've been playing it and just literally treating it like just a regular, you know, video game and wanting to get serious. The thing is that I remember in earlier episodes of Weapon Wheel Podcast, BG was like, oh, you know, now that you can parry, it makes the game a lot easier. I was like, parrying? Yeah, I mean, if you give me a game where you parry, that makes me feel good, because I'm confident in my parrying capabilities. And once I was able to figure that out and then work around the game's puzzles, that's what really trips me up, is puzzles and then feeling overwhelmed, because the zombies or the monsters in Resident Evil games, they don't go down, right? They don't go down. You got to empty a clip. And I was always worried about scarcity and ammo and guns, but I kind of got my hook. The game got this hooking me. I know what to do in regards to ammo and crafting and guns. Then now it's just more so just finishing up the story. And I'm in. I reunited with Ashley. I think that's where I finished up at. Reunited with Ashley. I'm back into like this. I don't know if I'm back in a castle or back in a church area or whatever. But it's getting kind of crazy. But I like the game. I still wouldn't agree with this nominee for Game of the Year. I don't think it should have been in that category. But it is a pretty damn good game, and I'm glad I'm playing it. And I foresee it being, I should be able to finish the game probably sometime next month. I'm working on a couple games, so that's the reason why I haven't beat it completely. I got my first achievement in Pow World, caught my first Pokemon, or whatever you call it, Pow.
What?
Pow World. Yeah, I got on last night. I invited you to the party. You didn't join. I couldn't join your game because your game wasn't joinable.
Oh, no. I was in the Discord.
Oh, okay. The Pow World, I need your help there for sure.
Yeah, I played a lot of Pow World, like a ridiculous amount. Like, I've streamed it 5 times.
Oh, really? On Addict's Arena, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I'm going to try to join one of those streams for sure to try to get some gameplay, because that'll be another game that I would like to work on in the process.
That gamer score.
I do want it. It's only 10 achievements, bro. I gotta get them before I have to get those. And speaking of 10 achievements, I think I'm on the verge of crossing 30,000 gamer score this month, the month of January. I think the most I've ever done.
You want to elaborate the games that you're playing to get the?
Hey, some of these games are tough, actually. But it started. Believe it or not, I started with RoboCop and Cocoon. I got 100% completion on RoboCop, 100% completion on Cocoon. So the recognizable regular game, right? So nobody can take that away. But then I kind of got crazy because there's this person on Twitter who follows me on Xbox who literally kind of just tries to mirror my games or whatever to outdo me, and we were going at it and just checking each other. And then he did something ridiculous that pissed me off, so I unfriended him. So I don't.
You have, unfriended him?
I unfriended him. I didn't want him on my leaderboards. It made no sense.
So just to clarify, so the listeners know, you unfriended someone because you got tired of them beating you in gamer score.
I got sick and tired of them. Pretty much put me in a position where I feel like I had to buy some bullshit games just to do it. Because what he would do is I would get up by like 2,000, 3,000, and then I would take a break and play my regular games like Resident Evil 4, like the other game I'm working on. And then he'll come back, play some bullshit games that are worth 3,000 or 5,000 gamer score. And I'm like, yo, I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this all month, because at the end of the day, it's not worth it. So I had to get rid of the toxic. That's the toxin. So I got rid of the toxin.
Isn't that more of your behavior and not necessarily his? Because he's engaging. If you would just let him
he's
win,
he's enabler. Over. He's enabler, influencing.
He's enabling
that
you.
Yeah, I will re-add him in February. But
do you want to say who it is?
It's Holy One.
Holy One. So
yeah, Holy One.
You are essentially rigging your friends list to make sure you win.
I don't talk to half the people on Xbox anyway, so I've been looking to do some cleansing of friends. I was like, if I kept it to only people,
but you
that
just said you're going to re-add them, so this isn't part of your cleansing.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Want to see what he landed at, you know? But he's a shout out to Holy One. He does nothing but play video games, and then corny video games that try to outdo me on Xbox. He doesn't. When it comes to regular games, he's not messing with me.
Games.
No. No. Here's a problem. I did kind of game comparisons. When it comes to regular AA, indie, AAA games, he's not touching me. Is when it comes to those bull crap games, those $4.99 achievement games, then yeah, he has access to probably more funds to buy those games in bulk and play them for about 20 minutes, and then
but
and he's set for the month.
You're also playing these same.
Yeah, but I'm doing that just to keep my head above water. Because
you,
regular,
before you came across them, you never bought these corny games.
I wasn't buying them. No. Like, what happened was, I think Xbox encouraged us to get the gamer score. Remember, they had those months where, you know, the rewards, back when rewards meant something, they had like
you get like 10,000
yeah, yeah. So yeah, that's what encouraged me. And It does feel good when you have a bunch of completions, right? You know, I don't think I'll ever care about a platinum. Or when Xbox finally get out of the gaming business, maybe I'll care about platinums. But I like the number. I think I'm going to cross 300,000 gamer score this year. Lord willing. Like,
are you in the 200,000 yet?
I'm 270,000 as of right now.
Hey, there's no way you don't pass 300,000 playing these corny ass.
yeah, that's the thing. But I got about. But if you notice, if you look at my Twitter on my games tracker, my games beat tracker, I don't include these games. Like, I don't include them as like games beat. You know what I mean? So right now,
this is just your pettiness.
This is pettiness. This is ultimate pettiness. I had people inboxing me on Xbox. How'd you get your gamer score so high? What are you playing? I tell them straight up, BS games. That's what they are. But that was
all they got to do is compare games with you.
Yeah, that's all they got to do.
What's funny is I share a digital library with you, so I can see these games.
Yeah.
Look, oh, Smooth bought a game. What game is it? I look at, oh, it's this bullshit.
But I would like to get the completion in Pal World, so you're going to help me do that. And you know Pal World is going to be one of those games, right? It's in game preview, so by the time it finally launches, it's going to have like 3,000 gamer score, because after the bugs get fixed and they started adding more stuff to story element, things that actually matter, some multiplayer elements, I think all the achievements in this game is relegated to just catching Pokemon or pals, fighting different pals, right?
A good portion of it, and then there's like the majority of it is like beating the tower bosses.
Okay, have you beaten a tower boss yet?
No, I haven't.
All right, well,
they're pretty powerful, but I do know that once you get to that point,
mm-hmm.
where you got everything you need, you could just run them all. You can run over them all one at a time, like very easy.
I'm looking forward to that for sure. Definitely looking forward to
Right now I'm leveling up. That's the thing I'm doing now. I'm just leveling my pile up. What's funny is I had like a wooden, like it was a wooden shell and a stone fortress inside of it. And the whole point of that was, is if I ever migrate that to like an online server, if they allow you to do that, I wanted the people who come to attack me think that my base is weak. Oh, it's got this wooden out structure. So it either A, make them underestimate me, or B, they don't want to raid me because they just think I don't have anything. Well, then I got raided by the AI, and it caught my whole wooden infrastructure on fire.
Oh, wow.
So it literally burnt.
So Power World is the latest, you know, sensation, independent sensation, small game that blew up. Overnight, 8 million in sales from what was last reported. Number one of the highest selling games on Steam, or the highest player count on Steam since PUBG, is ranked second, I believe, at this time. And it's obviously a game day one on Game Pass. So our Xbox, family are claiming this game as an exclusive as much as PlayStation fans claim Baldur's Gate 3 as an exclusive. For a few months, as it was, you know, the hot commodity that wasn't on Xbox earlier. But Power World's in game preview now. This developer is, I guess, is notorious for not putting games on PlayStation. I think their first game was Cratopia, and that still isn't on PlayStation. They got into some banter with some fanboys in regards to its release on PlayStation. PlayStation doesn't have a preview program, so that's part of the reason why it's there, but it is in Game Pass. It has the cool thing about it is, like, obviously it's popular on internet, popular on Steam, and it's on Game Pass. So word of mouth is allowing this game to get shine. And it's also now one of the most, play games on Xbox, even though unfortunately the Xbox version and the Steam version are, you know, different versions. The Xbox got an older version of the game. Game is kind of ugly, in my opinion. It could use some, I know it's in game preview, it could use some optimization, and hopefully that comes soon. Shout out to them. I mean, hopefully they don't get themselves in legal trouble with the Pokemon company and Nintendo, because a lot of the pals are what to me look like Pokemon knockoffs to the nth degree. some of them, like, I don't know, man. I don't know how, what they did, or if they had like an artist who designed these, or if they, you know, allegedly went through AI and the AI just pretty much spit out Pokemon. Who knows? But what do you think of Power World success and impending, you know, legal challenge from Nintendo? Do you think there's a case there?
First off, PlayStation's had preview games in their system before. They had Temtem. Literally says in the promoting material, preview game exclusive to PlayStation. So it's not necessarily a matter of they don't have the means to do this, as if PlayStation deems you worthy doing it. And where Temtem was exclusive, I guess they felt like that was, you know, worthy. As far as like the lawsuit thing, it could happen. I don't think, because the thing is they're issuing cease and desist to people sharing the mod for the game, turning it into Pokemon. So you mean to tell me they have the ability to do that, but they can't shut down the game if it's, if they stole their designs?
Yeah.
And maybe it takes a little bit more longer because they try to shut the whole game down. But to me, like, if you were going after them, you wouldn't just announce on the internet, we're going after them, we're investigating them. You would just shoot them down one random morning.
Yeah, I kind of read it the same way too. I feel like if they had a case, they would act on it, right? And I don't think they have a case, because the game itself overall is too different than your standard Pokemon game. It's just the likeness of some of the Pokemon that really they would have, they could challenge. But then again, I think it's different enough where I don't think it goes anywhere.
And people are like trying to reach with some of these designs. Like, they are similar in some degrees, but they'll act like, okay, this Pokemon, he was on four legs. This one's on two, but they kind of look alike. Being on two legs and four legs is a pretty big distinguisher when it comes to a model design. Would you not agree, kid?
Yeah, no, it's a big difference. Yeah.
It's like, look, like, you know, I get it. Some people are upset. You should be more upset for Nintendo having this formula for decades and never used it besides anything else but their turn base. That's who you should be more upset with, is them.
But Power World, again, popular game. Shout out to the, what they call, Pocket Team? The Pocket Guys or whatever? I forget the name of the studio.
I don't know what their team is.
But they're enjoying the success. I would like to get into it again. My beef with games like Power World is the survival aspect of it. It's the reason why I can't get into Conan. It's the reason why I can't get into Ark, Minecraft. The survival element. There's a bunch of games that's niche, and Microsoft Xbox, they dabble into this genre a lot, and they're probably the only major first party that dabbles in this type of genre as well, you know, with like stuff like State of Decay, Grounded, and stuff like that. So they supply games. So on Xbox guys are used to playing these type of games. Me personally, I'm an Xbox guy, but I'm not interested in those type of games.
Not to mention they actually work with like Ark is in Game Pass, and that's like probably one of the biggest survival type of games you can have. Like, they've been doing this for a while. It's like, look, like, I understand, like, I don't really go at the Nintendo people for wanting them to say something, because at the same time, even though I don't agree with them going after them, I could kind of understand why people think they should. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you can look at this and say, okay, this looks a little spooky. But as far as, like, people saying, oh, this game needs to be shut down, it's exact copies, I don't agree with that. I think this game has similarities for sure, but to say it's an exact copy, I think that's stretching it.
Yeah. Again, I feel like they did enough to be unique, and it's apparently the game that every body wanted. But it's out. It's hot. It blew up overnight pretty fast. It's on Xbox Game Pass, and Steam PC Game Pass. The episode we missed last week, well, we didn't miss, is recorded, probably release it as an exclusive to members if anybody want to listen to a one-side podcast. But It was 45 minutes last episode that we recorded that's unreleased. We talked about the Xbox Direct, and we could just do it. Not really, I guess, a quick recap, or we could touch up on, you know, what was there. I think I asked you, what grade did you give the Xbox Direct last week?
I think I said a 7-8 is where I would give it, like around that area.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I recall you saying your biggest issue with the Direct was lack of solid release dates. I think we got
I felt like it's been long enough, or I wouldn't be like, I understand, especially people like myself, where we're just like, look, we're tired of seeing games without release dates. And I get it. Like, you don't necessarily have to give release dates these days because of the way the industry is handled. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's just like, just because they don't have to doesn't mean we want to see it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I do agree with you with the lack of release date. I think Hellblade was the only one with the release date. The others, obviously, coming later. I think that's because they all are coming at, like, you know, the second half of the year, Q3, Q4. But I'm going to say, man, I did like the Direct. I thought it was a better Direct than last year. And people probably say that's recency bias. I don't think so. The biggest thing, what made the Direct so special last year was a couple of reasons. One, we weren't used to Xbox having a Direct, right? A good Direct, right? And they hit us with the surprise of Hi-Fi Rush, which was like a shadow drop, and it was a quality game. It wasn't no BS game. It was a quality game. It rated highly. So when that happened, it was like, all right, we get used to this. But when you look in hindsight, when you look at all the other games that were shown, Redfall, Forza, Minecraft Legends, and I believe, was the Elder Scrolls update? Mm-hmm. Those are all essentially mediocre games, right? You know, Redfall was mediocre, bad. Forza didn't live up to the hype, and
Minecraft Legends was
like, all right, it's not for everyone type game, that, right? You know, it is what it is. It was the hour, right? Minecraft Legends was this year's era was this year's Minecraft, essentially, when it was showing. It's like, all right, we don't care, but it's there, but we don't care. And then the Elder Scrolls. So the thing is, I feel like this year it was more quality hits, tentpole games that we thought were all launching, like, maybe in different respective years. Earlier, was it last year, we were talking about Indiana Jones as of like 2026, 2025, right? We weren't thinking of, like, you know, that would be a big fall game in the future, right? So when you consider Avowed, Hellblade 2, and Indiana Jones, those games are all big games. They're all coming this year, and they're like, I think those games are big enough to have their own directs, and the quality of the games are just better. They're all, I think, all pretty good games. I think every game that was in that direct are games that will likely land at like an 85 or better. When they release on Metacritic, I think they all will land at an 85 or better. I didn't see anything that looked mediocre or trash at this game at that direct. Hellblade obviously looks gorgeous. It's not for everyone. I know people were complaining that the game is, you know, $50 and it's digital only. So people got really smoked for that. When they see $50, it's like, oh, this is not good enough. This is the game is not as big. The game is, there's no improvement, et cetera, et cetera. So there's that argument. About people had, like, you know, are pretty much, I guess, indifferent about it. Me personally, I like what I saw from Avowed. I like the graphics. I like Obsidian's RPGs, their style of RPGs. I think people had issues with the field of view, or the way the combat, or the first person view looks. Somebody said it looked like a VR game. I mean, I was in disagreement with that, but I think what it is that they're creating, and this is going to sound bad, but I don't think the product is going to turn out bad. I think Obsidian is making a in-depth but casual RPG game, casual to the point where I feel like they're not putting boundaries on it. They're making it like really approachable, very accessible, because you're going to be able to dual-wield wands and stuff like that, or a gun and a sword in their hand. So I feel like, yeah, it could kind of look odd, but when you think about the mix and matching of weapons and stuff, you're not going to be beholden to either a sword and a shield or only a bow and arrow. I think they did something where they got to make both hands work, left and right, and it has to feel natural. And I think they likely nailed that, but it's probably at first glance, from a visual standpoint, it's not like transitioning right. But I think with a little bit of time, they'll polish that up. And I think that's honestly probably just a FOV adjustment.
I agree. I think that Microsoft's going to have a pretty solid year. Are they going to hit everything out of the park? No. But I think they're going to have enough that justifies the time that they went into. You know, a lot of people think this year might be better than last year, which is crazy if you think about it, because I felt like last year was a really solid year.
I'm one proponent. I believe 2024 will be better than 2023. I say that confidently. I think 2023 is overrated. Not to say that I didn't have any good games. I think 2022 was pretty decent. 2021, in my opinion, so far of the 2020s, was the best all year so far. All of the 2020s, I think 2021 was the best year for video games so far. 2023 coming in at a close second. And I think 2024 will eclipse both years. Now, a lot of people will disagree with me for some reason, and the reason what proved that 2023 was all that great, the Game Awards, when you look how consistent the nominations were, the same five games, and I'm like, in a year that was full of great games, but you keep nominating the same five games for every award, it was like, to me, that is not great.
Do you think that's a lot of just, not necessarily the other games weren't good, but those five games are like just drastically higher than those other games?
No, because if 2023 was that great, you would have a diverse nomination list across the board. You know what I mean? Because that means you could be like, all right, this game didn't get nominated. This batch of games didn't get nominated here, but now we can probably nominate them for best direction. You know what I mean? They can make the cut for best direction or best action RPG. They could, like, I don't think if the gap was small between the game of the year and the other games, then a lot of these games should have showed. A lot of games should have gotten. It should have been a weak year for nominations. I feel like a lot of games should have only gotten like one or two nominations. Not one game shouldn't have gotten 7 to 10 nominations. You know what I mean? I don't think it was that. I really don't think it was that great of a year if you could only identify those five games that they nominated for almost every award that wasn't a streamer's award. Like, then that's not telling me it's a great year. I feel like 2024 will be that. And I think a lot of people are going to disagree with 2024 being a better year than 2023, at least as of right now. And the biggest reason is PlayStation. The lack of PlayStation first party, the lack of like things coming out exclusively them that's of quality. And so people will dismiss it. And I think people would
have. You don't think there's anything they can do to like fix that perception? Do you think that Microsoft can release like a fantastic game, but it's not going to realistically do anything? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think Microsoft. I think all three games that we know of, because I feel like there's at least another two games that they could put out this year. I feel like all three games are going to be really good. I think their games won't have a PlayStation impact though. You know what I mean? They're not going to be a Spider-Man. They're not going to be a God of War or Horizon. They're not going to do something that's going to, you know, march people to the stores and stuff like that. People will talk about them. People would, you know, tweet about them and stuff like that. They're going to do good on Metacritic, but these games aren't going to sell. Obviously, the Game Pass, they'll do what they can. I don't know if they'll come close to, like, you know, a Starfield. Maybe, who knows? But they're not going to do what PlayStation typically does, because just Microsoft hasn't found a way to like pretty much get people out of the seat for their product anymore, right? So, but as far as I think what Xbox contributes to the year, the game releases, because I think third party is going to be pretty good, and everybody started really strong with Like a Dragon Infinite, with Tekken 8. I think there's a couple games in February that's coming out. Their sleepers are going to come out very strong. And I think third party is going to provide a strong year, just as they did last year. And I think Xbox is going to provide a stronger year. So Xbox is literally going to be fulfilling what PlayStation typically does in terms of game releases and the quality of the games. The games are going to be that good, but it's not going to be perceived that way. Because what happened is the majority of our gaming market and the majority of the gaming industry are PlayStation fans, PlayStation buys. And if PlayStation is absent from dropping quality games, the year isn't going to feel as great as last year, because at least Spider-Man was coming. And then all the other big games that did come out had some sort of PlayStation affiliation with it last year, right? Same so with 2021.
What you're pretty much saying is, even if Microsoft came out with like really high quality games,
yeah,
it, because the landscape is so towards PlayStation, it doesn't matter what those games are.
Yeah.
I feel you on that. I do think that you're not wrong entirely, but I think there is some caveat to that. I think if Microsoft could release games and get that kind of momentum, but the problem is I do think that the industry has been heavily going towards that third-person action adventure over the shoulder type of thing. And I feel like until Microsoft makes a game that's on that caliber, doesn't have to be like the best game in the world, until they make a game on that caliber that's received well a few times, I don't think it's going to matter what Microsoft does. Now, you know, they can release good games, because I think Starfield was a good game. Maybe it was, you know, underwhelming in a lot of areas, but I don't think we can say it was a bad game.
It was a really good game, dude. It's a really good game. It's one of the best games that came out last year, but it was buried by the other four games that released that made 2023 so great. But Starfield was falsely a victim of 2023 being a great year.
I would agree with you on that. You know, I think, you know, Starfield came out, and probably Starfield would have come out in any other year, would have been a guaranteed nomination for game.
Starfield comes out 2020, it's game of the, no, it's not game of the year. It might get a nomination, but it's not game of the year, because 2020 you had Last of Us, you had Ghost of Tsushima, and you had a few other games. If Starfield comes out in 2021, it wins game of the year. If Starfield comes out in 2022, what won game of the year? Elden Ring in 22?
Yeah.
It gets nominated. Probably doesn't win, but it gets nominated. And if Starfield comes out this year, it probably wins. It probably wins, unless this, 'cause go ahead.
I'd be very curious what exactly goes down. You know, I'm not saying, I do believe that Starfield is a great game, but I think it was like the logistics of the matter. It was like the little things that kept adding up that made Starfield what it was. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious that they would have got those things, mm-hmm. you know, ironed out. Would we have gotten the same results in the industry? Because I do feel like that there were some people in the industry that was very upset they didn't get a review code, and I think they bombed it.
Yeah.
But how big does that tunnel really go? You know what I'm saying? Like, I would be happy. I'm happy if I'm wrong, because that means that these people aren't using, you know, the power that they have to not get it. I mean, look what you've seen today. You know, people from IGN and stuff was complaining that they weren't getting exclusive access to Suicide Squad. So
yeah.
If you see that, and you see the media getting upset over stuff like that, why isn't it such a huge stretch saying that it's possible that some of this media feels a way that they didn't get the opportunities that they are entitled as, feels like they should have got, and they take it on the game itself?
Yeah, you know, I think, shout out to Suicide Squad. Even though I don't think it's a great game, period, at all. Just based off what I played, I think, what would you feel if the industry or more big players took the Warner Brothers route and just kind of said, F it, y'all get the review when the game comes out?
I feel like it would be rough at first for a lot of people, but I do think it would start to... The thing is, the reason these companies feel the way they do is mm-hmm. because the industry caters to them.
Mm-hmm.
But if they stop catering to them sooner or later, it would become the new standard. When you're going against the grain, it's a lot harder to do something. But when you're going with the general energy in the industry, then it's a lot easier because that's just the standard of the industry.
So my thing is, right, do you think, like, I think it's going to turn out badly for Suicide Squad, because I think what happened is people were going to do what Suicide Squad, what they did with Starfield. You know how when a good handful of publications didn't get access to Starfield, they were on Bethesda shit list, and then they got bullied into releasing those review codes, and then it turns out they all gave them sixes, gave the Starfield sixes to drop its meta score from, like, I think an 86 to an 83.
I think it started out at 87, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It started out actually pretty high.
The PC version
The game started out at a 90, and then it just kept plummeting. And every time it got, like, a bad review, like, it was a report on it. I think Suicide Squad is going to review poorly. I believe that. And
what do you think it's going to review at?
I think it's going to land in the high 60s.
Ooh, high 60s?
Yeah. It may not be a high 60s game, but I think it's going to land in the high 70s. I think it will land in the high 60s because it's going to be a revolt. I think if the industry moved forward with, like, putting everybody not given these privileges, right? Obviously, getting early access to a game, it's good in some cases. It's good for the game. It's good for the publications that have it. But if developers did that, right, they would literally put everybody on an even playing field, right? It will force reviews to come out pretty much maybe within 7 days of the game's release. But I think we would get more of an honest score.
I think, you know, it'd be interesting.
What's up?
If they don't necessarily, like, give it to everyone at the same time, but mm-hmm. you know how, like, all these games have, like, an early access now?
Yeah.
If, like, you get it that early access thing, you don't get it before the early access. So you still get a little bit of time where the general audience don't have it, but everyone, because I honestly think that an avenue that these companies aren't looking at is, like, there's so many people like myself that it's not even about the money.
Yeah.
You know, I just want it for the coverage.
Yeah, yeah.
I will gladly pay for my copy. Just give it to me when the general audience, when the general reviews get it.
Yeah. That's fair. That's fair. I mean, they should, no, that would be wrong. That would be a bad idea. I was like, they should have a preview program that allows people to buy themselves access to the game early, just so they can.
Yeah, I mean, like, small content creators, we paying for everything at that point.
Yeah.
But to me, I would rather do that and only, like, cover big, big games throughout the year than, because I feel like, you know, you're not really gonna. It's so hard to grow without the industry's help. And mm-hmm. these people are so picky on who gets it. And it's just, it's frustrating because at the same time, like, these companies, like, it's like I said, dude, like, I'm a huge Final Fantasy VII fan. Mm-hmm. Huge. Love the franchise. Love VII in particular. I see these people going to these events and it's just like, you never see them talking about it. Like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, this industry doesn't reward passion. They reward numbers. They reward clickbait. That's what they reward, because if they were rewarding passion, they would give more opportunities to people that love their franchises.
Yeah.
But they don't care. So it's just like, you know, the industry, for the most part, now that they might reach down and pick up a ladder every now and then, but a lot of the times that ladder's shut. You know, and you got to know someone to get an opportunity. And it's frustrating. So it's just like, I'd rather. And what's funny is, like, the mid-sized people, the people that generally get the review codes, they're the ones that's going to be complaining, because up until that point, they never had to pay for it. And now, because they would do a program like that, they would have to pay for it. Yeah. Now, like, the ACGs, the IGNs, they're probably still not going to have to pay for it. But it's just, like, it's just frustrating, man.
Yeah, it is. But we'll see how that all, you know, pans out. But I'm looking forward to see it. Because the thing is, if you notice, right, is now they didn't go as far as Hogwarts, right? But people actually started to buy in support of Suicide Squad after the whole IGN debacle. My thing is, Destin was the one that wrote that preview article, right? That kind of got them in hot water, which kind of screwed it for the rest of, like, the publications. Like, a situation like this, and I asked this on the ILP, but you guys kind of made it clear, like, there's no way, like, nobody gets, like, kind of, like, hitting on because of that, right?
About it. The thing is, like, you have to, like, really mess up to for IGN to get blacklisted, because IGN's such a huge conglomerate. Mm-hmm. You can't just avoid them. You can't just ignore them. They're so big.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Moving on. Let's talk about the one just tidbit. Halo Infinite no longer doing seasons. I think season 5 was their final season. Or is it season 6 is going to be the final one?
Yeah, they're doing like smaller things pretty much. Like, they're already doing those things, aren't they?
Yeah, but yeah.
Now they're just going to do them more often.
And they're going to these content updates, which is going to be operations or something like that. So a lot of people are utilizing that, like, oh, going to get like, oh, this game's supposed to last 10 years, all this other stuff. What do you think is the reason for that? Is this like a legit, like, you know what? Like, let's move away from the seasons.
Yeah,
just
they're updates. They're dropping support for Infinite. Like, I think they already had the majority of their studio working on Halo, whatever the next Halo project is. And I think what you're seeing the past couple years with these seasons is essentially just a little bit of work with a lot of work they've already done. That was like Sunset. I think you're seeing a lot of that, and I think you're eventually. What they're doing now is they're like, okay, you know, we supported it to a degree. Now let's focus on the next one. Because I do think if they don't get their shit together, I do think the franchise will be sunsetted. It will be shelved for a foreseeable future.
Yeah, I'm a little upset because I don't think they should have went into the whole live service thing. I still think Halo Infinite's multiplayer is incredible. I think the game plays great. There's nothing wrong with Halo Infinite. And the thing is, I love the campaign, and I want to continue the campaign. I really do. I think it's worth playing through again. If I got to play it in co-op, but I want more from Halo Infinite. And I'm just not happy where how that landed. There's still a couple of things we didn't get. The console version never got its ray tracing update. I don't think it's necessary, but didn't get that. We based off how they pitch Halo Infinite, we never got a campaign expansion, and I think it deserved a campaign. Don't restart the whole story process. Start from somewhere. I think Halo Infinite had a good campaign. I love the weapon. I love the character, the new Cortana, the pilot. Yeah, I thought the story was dope. And then, you know, you have the whole thing with, Atriox at the end. It's like, come on, man. Like, you don't toss that away. Figure it out, man. I'm not done with Halo
one
yet.
Of the biggest balls that they've dropped in a long time.
Yeah.
Like, Atriox is a fantastic character, and it does suck that it's looking like that's a wrap. Like, I don't know if they're going to continue that. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll have to see how they handle going forward with the franchise.
Yeah. So other than that, I mean, on Monday, Microsoft laid off 1,900 Xbox and Activision employees, majority of these people from ABK, essentially. This is shortly after them announcing them hitting the $3 trillion market cap. This is this was met with a lot of like backlash and all sorts of feedback. Now, just to throw some context to this layoff, right? There's been a layoff ever since January 2nd of this year, because I think January 2nd up until yesterday, there was another layoff. I think today from another company, I forget, Embracer maybe. there's been layoffs almost every day. Layoff from in all from the gaming industry. I mean, most of these companies laying off 20% of their workforce, 80% of their workforce in some cases. We had a Discord had a big layoff. Riot Games had a big layoff. Embracer, I think that was just today. And they canceled Deus Ex. There was a lot, and people would do your typical news, laid off. This is having layoff. But when it came down to Microsoft, man, the world had to stop to acknowledge these layoffs, even to the point where senators and politicians are chiming in. And everybody, it's like everybody ignored all the other reports just to chime in on this one. And it caused a lot of outrage. Mike Ybarra left. Again, which I think you predicted some few months back, he left ABK. They already found his replacement, and that came today. So
it's quick too. So they he's been gone. Like they were getting rid of him a long time ago because they replaced him quicker. Yeah, this is an example of someone that was, you know, already having a path. He wasn't going to be there because I don't think Mike Ybarra was going to stay.
Yeah.
I think all this was just behind closed doors. You know, let's play nice because it's awfully funny that he had his person in a couple days and they still don't know who's taking over Ryan.
Mm.
Jim Ryan.
Oh yeah, right. It's an equivalent. Yeah, so. A lot of people like, oh, this is like, there's a lot of like, you know, bad turmoil. They canceled the game Odyssey that they were working on, that Blizzard was working on. So, Attic, what do you think? What do you make of these layoffs? Like I said, there was a lot of politicking. There's a lot of like feedback and a lot of, you know, hatred towards Microsoft and doing these layoffs. I just want to hear your take and where you stand.
I think the biggest thing people are, I think the reason they're getting a little bit more fire in this is because it resulted in something that people want. A lot of people in the industry didn't want. They didn't want the buying of, they don't want the merger. So they're looking at the merger. Can you hear that?
I can't hear anything.
Okay. So they don't want the, when it comes to the merger, they're like, look, they have something to point at. All these layoffs are happening because of this merger. Everyone said this merger is bad.
Yep.
You guys still went through it, but now look what's going on. So I think that has something to do with that. I think another thing that has to do with it is just like, look, like layoffs are very common, apparently. You said since the second. I think, you know, a lot of this is more corporate greed than anything.
Yeah.
I think a lot of these a lot of these companies were having record-breaking, you know, profits during the pandemic, and they were getting all this money because people were stuck at home. Mm-hmm. And now that people are going home, I think they're trying to keep that money. Okay, what can we do to keep our investors happy? You know, it's that quarter draining. You know, we're good. We got to make more money next quarter than we made this money. Okay, we can't do it from this. Okay, then let's lay off half of the staff. And you know, and unfortunately, it's not going to change because this industry, for some reason, it's very common. And, you know, instead of us coming together and just saying, yo, this isn't cool, we need this change, we'd rather fight with each other. And it's not cool. You know, when I brought it up and I said, it's not even a matter of people getting laid off. I don't like how they're laid off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't find out you're getting laid off till you go to the office and your car don't work. Like, to me, that just feels wrong. It does. To, like, the core of my bones, that feels wrong. And I get it. There's security purposes. A lot of reasons why they don't tell you you're getting laid off. But at the same time, that's not an excuse to me. There's got to be different ways of handling this. Maybe they can start, you know, reaching out to a third party and trying to secure as many jobs as they can. But transitioning from this, like reach out to like headhunters or whatever. It's like, yo, we got this amount of people. Who are you guys looking to hire? And then when they have these you know, these meetings where these people are getting laid off, it would look better. We laid off 1,900 people, but we are able to land 1,200 of them jobs on their exit meeting. It's up to them if they take it, but it's there if they want it. I don't like when you just walk up to work, you just shit out of luck. You gone. And people sitting there telling me, oh, addict, that's just how business works. Well, business is shitty. It shouldn't be that way.
Yeah.
And people are sitting there. What's just crazy is people will literally, these corporations aren't your friends. I have friends that's executives at Xbox. And then I have people that are just pretty much who I work with. Mm-hmm. You know, I have good relationships with a lot of people that at Xbox. But at the same time, it's just like, so this isn't really an Xbox issue. It's a whole world issue, corporate issue in general.
Yeah.
You should not find out you're getting fired the same day that you go into work. And then people sit there, well, you know, you don't have to tell them if you're looking for another job. Your LinkedIn pretty much rats you out. If you put on there that you secretly open, you don't think someone from your work's going to see that shit?
Yeah.
It's industry standard to give what when you leave a job, Smooth? A 2 week notice, and people say, well, you know, you don't have to, but that's industry standard. If you're hiring for someone and you find out they didn't give a 2 week notice, you might be a little bit more on the side of not hiring them because they're not being professional behind closed doors. People talking about job hopping. It just feels like, oh, you shouldn't be job hopping. Anything in this industry, anything in the world that benefits us in terms of finding jobs, making more money, and being treated fairly is always looked at negative for some reason. But when you throw it on the other side, anything they do, well, that's just the way the industry works. You know, they could just fire 1,900 people the same day and no one's going to bat an eye. Why wasn't that more scrutiny than people that are trying to get jobs or people job hopping? Mm-hmm. It's just like, I don't like it, man, because we see it all the time. Oh, yeah. Why are you job hopping? You should just stay. Where's the loyalty? There ain't no fucking loyalty in corporations, man. No. You're only as good to these people as long as you can provide them something. The moment that provide is gone, it's a wrap.
Yeah. Yeah, all these industries are like that. And if you work for, you know, corporate America, if you work for a public company, or if you working for a non-union, non-government job, you pretty much, that's just a gamble. It's like it's territory, right? It's the American way, and it sucks. So nobody has to, you know, like it. And you know, it sucks when people, you know, lose their job. I'm the one that recognizes, hey, like a lot of these people, Microsoft is the richest company in the world. They have people getting laid off. I mean, there's different packages that they're probably good. Probably a lot of these people don't have to go into work immediately. I think they're good
I don't know about that. I think it depends. The Mike Ybarras are probably good.
I don't think Mike Ybarra got laid off though. I think he got money. I don't think he was laid off.
But what I'm saying is you're trying, like, I'm not saying you're trying, but you're comparing like the lead developers or the lead artist designer or the person over the whole studio. I don't think you compare that to a lot of these devs are working from paycheck to paycheck. Mm-hmm. They're not making all that money. Like, what didn't Jason Ronald try to say that, like, the average game developer makes like $130,000 a year or some shit like that?
That's a lot more than me.
How many developers commented and said, I think it's funny you think we all make $133,000 a year?
Hey, well, I wouldn't be a developer if I, like, the thing is, that's a, I'd like to make $130,000.
But that's probably just the minority. That's probably, you know, team leads. It's probably just people that are strictly just working in like New York, like straight up New York, or working on the West Coast. Like, we're talking about probably like the 1% of people making that kind of money, and I'm not saying like none of them make that kind of money. I'm sure a lot of developers make a decent amount of money, especially people starting out. And guess who these are affecting the most? They're not affecting the leads. Let's be real here. The leads aren't getting laid off. They're affecting the brunt workers. And I think the part that irritates me the most is we're always told if you work hard, you'll get rewarded. PlayStation tried to let go of people that worked on Spider-Man 2. So it's like, oh, you know, we make you a game such as Spider-Man 2. People love it. You're still going to get rid of us. Like, what is the incentive to like actually do better, to actually learn and to actually improve when it doesn't even matter if you make them any type of money, we're still going to get rid of you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like look at Epic. Epic got laid off a bunch of people last year. Epic. Company that makes billions of dollars in profit a year.
Fortnite, right?
Yeah.
It happens. No one's safe. Right? No company is safe. No company's too rich to lay anyone off.
Do you think this is because the companies generally can't afford to do that? Or do you think that they're being too greedy and they're doing it to save the bottom line for investors and shit?
I think it's a combination of, well, once you're in a public traded company, that's why if I was a business owner, successful business owner, I would never go public. I would never go public. I would remain private.
Because you lose control over your company very easily.
Yeah, it's a revolving door. And the thing is, you have one job, and that's to satisfy a bunch of people that has nothing to do with the business at all. I think
I'm not saying I know anything about what it takes to run a billion-dollar corporation or a trillion-dollar corporation. I don't. But I know from a person that's just outside looking in. You know, we talking about all the people that got let go. We're not even talking about the people that's left behind. You know, I saw someone on Twitter that said, I survived this one, but am I going to survive the next one? Imagine what it's like to wake up every day not knowing if you're going to be able to log into your credentials online or use your card to get in the building. Like, it's just not right. It's not a way to do business.
Yeah,
they want you to be professional, but they won't even give you the courtesy of letting you know you might need to look for work somewhere elsewhere.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough, but I do think, just to answer your question, I do think it's a combination of both. I think it's about protecting the bottom line. I think it's about like, cause the thing is, your numbers have to look good, right? And a lot of it, this is predicting what investors are going to respond with, trying to satisfy any loss. Oh, this is what we lost, but this is what we expect to gain after this. You know what I mean? It's a lot of it's bullish, it's bullshit, it's rubbish, whatever you call it. And it sucks. It sucks. And that's why, no matter what, you know, people were like, see, this is why we don't like mergers and acquisitions. Oh, if the merger would have fell through, it would have been worse. Because Activision would have lost so much like money and trust, stocks would have fell. They probably would have to go up for sale anyway, like even for even less. So
I don't think that they would be hitting with these layoffs if Microsoft would have bought them. But I do think you would see these same layoffs, not all at once, but they would have been sprinkled more frequently. Mm. You know, for instance, right now we might get 1,900 people being laid off now. I think you would have got that at about that same amount, but instead of it happening all at once, you might get 2,200 in 2 years because they're slowly not hitting quarterly every month, every quarter, and they're laying more and more people off from here in the next 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. But what's the crazy? Because like I said, when they acquired, they announced the attempt to acquire Activision, wasn't it reported that they had like 9,000 employees then?
And yeah, by the time the deal closed, they went up to like 17,000.
How did that? That's crazy. That's crazy.
So you see something like that? It's like I said, I understand. why they're doing what they're doing. I just feel like the world in general can improve how they lay people off. Like, it doesn't have nothing to do with this, just in general, they can improve on that. You I don't know how.
You want to hear something crazy, too? Like, with ABK, right? A lot of people that probably got laid off also, they're probably senior team or leadership teams that's outside the union. Because when layoffs happen, the union is what's protected. So, my wife, she has a union job, right? And, like, the company she worked for, they had rounds of layoff, but it affects the managers. They're not part of the union. So the thing is like, a lot of people were actually protected. And what happens is it impacts people that they can fire, the people that are not a part of the union. And I think ABK, that was a part of the whole thing. They got the union enacted. They recognized it. ZeniMax got a union, or like, I want to say last year. I know it's at the end of the day, that's just like kind of, it has nothing to do with as far as what, you know, it does have something to do with gains, but as far as the workers, it's like, that's one of the biggest differences about being in a union. When these layoffs happen and stuff, there's a lot of protection. There's a lot of job protections that these people have when you're within the union. When you're not, when you're just at the mercy of a corporation, you're just at the mercy of the corporation. It doesn't matter. They don't have to give a people in America are at will employment. That's what they call it. Employment at will, or terminate at will, or something like that. So if they employ you, they can terminate you for no reason at all. So it is what it is.
You know, people sit there and they're like, oh, that's just business. That's just how, you know, capitalism works. That's not right. Like,
it's the way it is.
Yeah, but it's the way it is until it's not the way it is. You know, we had a high time unemployment in quite a bit. You know, rent skyrocketed. It's like, look, like, you know, I'm not trying to like fear monger and stuff, but when you get people in certain areas and you get people certain down, like, you know, these Congress people, they want to sit there and they want to have their hand out. Sooner or later, the people are going to smack their hand back. Like,
yeah, you're right, man. Let's talk about, why are the Lakers losing to the Houston Rockets? That they need help. So ABK, the person that replaced Mike Ibarra's position, her name is I think it's what Joe. Why this was like flooding my Twitter. And it's not there anymore. I gotta pull this back up. Oh my goodness. But the thing is and I don't want to make it like about race, but you know, people are upset because this woman is a black woman. At least that's, she pairs this, and so people are saying this is like one of those quota hires, these woke hires or whatever, which is, that's like low key racist, just to even react that way. But from what I've read, she previously worked at Activision Blizzard as the manager for the Call of Duty franchise. Is that correct?
I don't know. That kind of broke like before, like right. I kind of saw it like right when all this started, like when me and you were about to go live.
Yeah, it says, I'm gonna open up the article. It says, I'm almost believe she actually also like went against the merger. She was one of the people that were, I think, against it, if I'm not mistaken. Her name is Johanna Ferries. She's the new president of Blizzard Entertainment. She said today, following email was delivered to all Blizzard employees by Johanna Ferries, the new president of Blizzard Entertainment. Dear Blizzard, though my official first day with you all is February 5th, I want to let you know immediately that it's an honor to join you next week in this new capacity. I do so humbly and in awe of all that Blizzard has stood for and delivered to the world for over 30 years. Today also brings some mixed emotions. The loss of talented teammates In recent days, it's hard to hold side by side with the immense excitement I feel about joining Blizzard and building on momentum you've created for Blizzard's next chapter. I want to thank Matt for the introduction, bring some further clarity of today's announcement, and share more about how I see our future together at Blizzard. I understand this is a lot to take in. The news of my appointment may no doubt bring up a range of reactions, questions, and even concerns. Activision, Blizzard, and King are decidedly different companies with distinct games, cultures, and communities. It is important to note that Call of Duty's way of waking up in the morning to deliver players can often differ from stunning games in Blizzard's realm, each with different gameplay experiences, communities that surround them, and requisite models of success. I've discussed this with Blizzard leadership team, and I'm walking into this role with sensitivity to those dynamics and deep respect for Blizzard as we begin to explore taking our universe to even higher heights. That's a long letter, but so they replaced Mike Ybarra's role, and Mike Ybarra, we'll see what he does. He's not done the type of work he's doing. He says he's going to travel the world and he's going to come back and he's going to work for another company that may allegedly get acquired by Microsoft. But
yeah, it'd be crazy if they just start buying every company he goes to.
Yeah, man. But yeah, it is what it is. I'm at this point with this whole Blizzard and Activision stuff. I'm like, yo, when are y'all going to start bringing stuff to Game Pass, bro? That's like when does it start finally benefiting me, the Xbox customer, like the Game Pass subscriber? With Q1 being light, I know people try to say, well, we got Pal World. Nah, Q1 is light on the first party. After the Xbox Direct, all I learned is a bunch of, like, Xbox second half is going to be top heavy or bottom heavy, whatever you call it, at the second half of the year. But if I'm them Q1, Q2, you drop them ABK games in Game Pass. You throw Call of Duty in there and whatnot. Like, what's going on with that, Attic?
I couldn't even tell you, man, because I feel like it should have been done by now. Mm-hmm. But you know, I don't know what the semantics behind it is. You know, people say that like Microsoft couldn't like intervene when they were buying them. But mm-hmm. I saw them kind of do it when they were buying Bethesda. Mm-hmm. Like, it literally, I think, I can't remember, it was a Dishonored game that literally came out of Game Pass. And then when they announced they bought them, that sucker was back in Game Pass in like a week.
Yeah.
And then Doom Eternal went in the day they announced that, if I remember, or the week after or something.
No, so Doom Eternal went in during the first batch of games, so right the day that they had that round table, or the day the deal closed, when the deal closed they had the round table, that's when they did the first batch. And then the second games dropped on Xbox 20th anniversary thing, their second Bethesda second drop, which featured Doom 1 in that batch.
Yeah, so I think that's where I stand with that. It's like, what exactly are they doing with
yeah,
this?
Yeah, I'm curious to see what's going on, but that's like, it's over. Hopefully we can start bearing
the fruits. I would like to see the Crash games and Spyro go there.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for the most. I'm waiting for that the most, and I know people are going to hate on me for saying this because I could buy them now probably for like $4 or $5. I want to play Prototype, but I want to play them in my subscription. And I'm just hoping secretly that these guys FPS boost some of those games in the past. So, but Attic, we're pretty much just about done. Our 12 minutes of the show, we covered what we wasn't able to cover last week, layoffs, and we talked about Pal World and the games that we're playing. So what you got going on before we get out of here? Anything upcoming?
I've been streaming Pal World's on the Addict Arena. I'm going to pick up tomorrow, stream some more Infinite Wealth. I've been mm-hmm. playing that game as well. I've been enjoying it. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on. And well, obviously, you know, me and Smooth talked about how we could be a little bit more consistent when it comes to this show. Mm-hmm. So we're going to improve on that too for you guys. Even though some of you guys can't stand our ass.
Yeah, my bad. It's going to be a short week this week for us, so we'll be back with episode 28 in a few days. I mean, depending on when you're watching this. So it's going to follow up, and then we should be on a consistent schedule from there on. Again, but hey, we didn't podcast last week, but we got to see each other in person last week. Had some BBQs in New York City. How did you like that?
It was good food.
Good food. Okay, but that was cool, man. You had your taste in New York. I'm sorry for your trip back. Kind of threw you for a roller coaster.
It was a nightmare.
But it's always good to see you in person, and so we'll be seeing you soon for, I guess, PAX East. But to everyone, please subscribe, join the Patreon for more good Planet Xbox podcasts. Make sure you tune in to Weapon Wheel every Sunday evenings, 5 p.m. Eastern. Check out the channel. I should have some videos. I'm working on a couple of things that are under embargo, but rest assured I'll have some content on the channel shortly. As always, guys, Xbox is the best box. I am the best bot. Good night or good morning if you're on the other side of the globe. We are out of here. Peace.